Good morning. My name is Molly, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Proposed Economic Program for 2010 conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you, Mr. Warner. You may begin your conference.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Welcome to the Mexican Ministry of Finance conference call on the proposed economic program for 2010. We would like to remind our friends from the press that this call is off the record. Just touching, as you all know, yesterday we sent the project for the budget for 2010 and the income law to Congress. And at the beginning, we briefly will discuss how we see the economy closing in 2009, and then I'll move briefly to the main elements of the economic package for next year. In the second quarter of 2009, the annual contraction of GDP at minus 10.3% was higher than the one observed in the first quarter. This reflected the slowdown in global economic activity, the change in the seasonal pattern due to the Easter holiday, and the effect of the influenza outbreak at the end of April and the beginning of May. Nevertheless, in the absence of the influenza and in seasonally adjusted terms, economic growth would have been close to zero quarter over quarter for the second quarter of 2009. Consistent with the global recovery that is starting, economic activity in Mexico is expected to have stabilized at the end of the second quarter, as sequential growth during the second half of 2009 is expected to be positive. Recent data are consistent with these projections. The IGAE for June posted a small drop of minus 0.2%, and if you adjust this for some remaining effects of the influenza, we think that activity was close to flat during that month. When you look at exports for June and July, we see seasonally adjusted increases, and the same happens with domestic sales. When you look at formal job creation for the last 3 months, we have had a positive creation of jobs of around 70,000. Budgetary revenues are expected to be lower by almost 480 billion pesos than the level anticipated in the revenue law for 2009. This implies a shortfall in revenues net of lower non-programmable expenditures, basically stripping out the revenue sharing we do with the states of around 430 billion pesos. And this projection, or this actualization of the projection, is very similar to the projections that we did at the time of the second expenditure adjustment that was announced maybe 4 or 6 weeks ago. As mentioned at that time, we will be adjusting to this shortfall by using 343 billion pesos coming from different sources of non-recurrent revenues, basically the revenues from Banco de Mexico, the income from the oil hedge, and an important part coming from the savings from the oil stabilization funds. And still, we will have to reduce expenditures by around 85 billion pesos. By the end of 2009, we will be posting a budget deficit of 251 billion pesos. This amount is equivalent to Pemex investment. Without Pemex investment, the public sector will be balanced. The public sector balance will be zero, and we will be complying with the zero deficit estimated for the year. The public sector borrowing requirement for 2009 will be around 3.3% of GDP, 1.2 percentage points of GDP higher with respect to those posted at the end of 2009, and higher than originally estimated, basically due to the significant drop in GDP. We will be posting public sector borrowing requirements that are similar in peso terms to the one estimated for the year, but obviously due to the significant drop in GDP vis-a-vis the slight increase in GDP that we had estimated for the year, this number as a percentage of GDP will be higher than what was estimated when we presented the economic program. In terms of the economic perspectives for 2010, Economic growth for Mexico is forecasted at 3%, consistent with growth of 2.3% in the U.S. Anticipated growth in Mexico will still leave the output gap at a negative level for 2010. The reference price for the Mexican oil mix in 2010 is $53.9 per barrel, 5.6% higher than that anticipated for 2009, but almost 25% lower than that incorporated in the income law for 2009. The oil production platform is expected to decrease again in 2010 by almost 5% and put us at a platform of 2.5 million of barrels per day. In terms of the framework with which we design our public finances strategy for the next 2 years and specifically for 2010, basically first relies on an inertial estimation of revenue for 2010. This will be lower by almost 374 billion pesos than the amount originally anticipated for 2009. This implies a gap equivalent to 3% of GDP. This gap includes a transitory drop in non-oil revenues due to the recession that is close to 155 billion pesos and a permanent decrease in income, in public sector income associated with oil revenues that is close to 220 billion pesos. To face this situation, this medium-term strategy that I mentioned considers these factors for the period from 2010 to 2012. A deficit and non-recurrent revenues will be used to cover the cyclical shortfall in revenues, while the response to the permanently lower oil revenues will include revenue-raising measures that will have a permanent nature and expenditure containment. The deficit will decrease as the cyclical improvement in revenues will allow us to return to a balanced budget. Therefore, we're proposing that the public sector deficit will be 60 billion pesos in 2010, 40 billion pesos in 2011, and then return to a balanced budget by 2012. All of this as the fiscal responsibility law allows us to do, stripping out the capex of Pemex. The specific measures in 2010 are the following. As I said, a moderate fiscal deficit of 60 billion pesos and non-recurrent revenues and the use of savings by 95 billion pesos for a total of 155 billion pesos. In terms of the savings and non-recurrent revenues, basically the 95 billion is split half and half in terms of non-recurrent revenues associated with the sale and concessions of public sector assets, and what will be remaining in the oil stabilization funds by the end of 2009. As I said, this is equivalent to 100% of the decrease in revenues that we estimate to be transitory and associated to the downward phase of the economic cycle. Second, total expenditure adjustment by 218 billion pesos are proposed. This includes a lower total expenditure level of almost 75 billion compared to what was proposed in 2009, and then an additional expenditure cut of 144 billion, basically to cover or to reassign to other type of expenditures that are inertial in their nature, such as pensions, the increase in anti-poverty program expenditure, and the increases in real wages to public sector employees granted throughout 2009. The third element will be higher tax revenues by almost 180 billion pesos, which will allow us to cover close to 80% of the fall in oil revenues anticipated for 2010, that obviously complemented with the expenditure cuts cover more than 100% of the permanent drop in revenues. In addition to the above measures, a real increase of 20 billion pesos is expected to materialize associated to the increase in the real prices of gasoline. When you put together all these measures, basically we have, in terms of income-generating measures, a total of around 220 billion pesos. This is, I mean, the measures that I mentioned sum up to 200 billion pesos, and we will talk a little bit further of some measures to strengthen the fiscal administration authority that is estimated to give us an additional 20 billion pesos. Therefore, all the measures proposed are giving us an increase in income of around 220 billion pesos. And on the side of expenditure, we have a reduction of expenditure of 74 billion pesos, giving us a total of almost 300 billion pesos, an amount that is larger than 2.5% of GDP in terms of total fiscal adjustment. In terms of the specific measures incorporated in the fiscal reform, this is a very broad revision of our tax framework. We are touching almost every tax that we have. This tax reform was designed to broaden the base and contemplate modifications, as I said, to all the major taxes, and the creation of a new contribution of 2% on total sales of all goods and services. With respect to excise taxes, first, we're proposing that the tax rate on beer will be increased from 25 to 28% during the period 2010 to 2013, and then return gradually to 25 after 2013. A quota of 3 pesos per liter of alcoholic beverages with more than 20 degrees is proposed. The establishment of a quota of 80 cents per gram of tobacco will be addition to the current tobacco taxes. With respect to games and lotteries, we're increasing the tax rate from 20 to 30%, and we are introducing in the telecommunications sector a tax of 4% to those services offered through public networks, excluding the public and rural phone network. We are creating a contribution to alleviate poverty. This contribution would be, as I said before, 2% and would be applied to the sales of all goods and services. Exports will have a zero rate, and the contribution has a cash base, and it applies to all stages of production in a non-cumulative way, allowing it to be credited. With respect to income taxes, first, regarding fiscal consolidation, deferred income tax payments older than 5 years will be made mandatory for those groups which consolidate through a payment schedule that implies that in each fiscal exercise, the 60% of the tax deferred balance is applied in that exercise, and the remaining 40% is divided in 4 payments of 10% during the next 4 years. Secondly, temporary increases in income tax rate for businesses and individuals. The highest increasing the highest bracket in terms of individual to 30%, increasing the corporate income tax to 30% for the period 2010 to 2012, and then we are also proposing that this rate go back in 2013 to 29% and to 28% in 2014. We are proposing to increase the rate of the primary sector to 21%, and for the tax on cash deposits, we are increasing the rate from 2 to 3% and reducing the exempt level from 25,000 to 15 monthly peso deposits. In terms of the revenue effect of all these measures, summing up in terms of groups, we are expecting that the excise taxes will give us around 21 billion pesos. All the income tax measures will give us almost 73 billion pesos, and the new contribution will give us also 72 billion pesos. In terms of public sector prices, we are expecting this policy to generate an additional revenue in 2010 of around 20 billion pesos. Therefore, the sum of all these measures gets us close to the 200,000 million pesos, the 200 billion pesos that I mentioned before, plus the tax administration measures that we will be implementing. Basically, there will be simplification measures. Taxpayers will be allowed to use their bank accounts and digital invoices as tax receipts, to pay their taxes using credit cards, and to process returns via internet, and the interest tax calculation for individuals will be simplified. Second, in terms of fighting tax evasion, the precautionary assurance process will be strengthened, particularly in cases where there is a high risk that these sources disappear, and the authority will be enabled to recover debts by collecting on accounts that the corresponding taxpayer has in the financial system. These, as I mentioned before, tax administration measures are expected to increase tax collection in 2010 by around 20 billion pesos. In terms of public debt for 2010, it's important to highlight that the expenditure reduction and revenue increase measures contained in the proposed economic program imply a public sector deficit of 323 billion pesos. This is the result of a capital expenditure by Pemex of 263 billion pesos and a deviation from the balanced budget rule by 60 billion pesos. These figures imply a domestic net indebtedness ceiling for the federal government by 340 billion pesos, 40 billion pesos lower to the one requested in 2009. This is explained by a lower deficit for the federal government along with a lower surplus for the public entities. These domestic financing needs imply that the government will have leeway to accommodate the issuance in the local bond market to prevailing market conditions with the objective of gradually returning to the issuance pattern in the long end of the curve that we had in 2008 prior to the financial crisis. But as we have done it in 2009, we will be very cautious in the way that we come back to our proposed issuance calendar so that we do not generate any type of additional volatility in domestic markets. Also, the proposed program implies a net foreign indebtedness ceiling for the public sector by $8 billion. In that sense, the external debt strategy will have the following objectives. One, to maintain regular access to international capital markets to refinance external debt amortizations for the year, which will be lower than those required in 2009. Second, to obtain at least a similar amount of financing with international financial institutions as that being implemented this year. This is $5 billion for the federal government and $2 billion for state development banks. The World Bank will continue playing an important role in the design and implementation of our debt strategy. And third, to explore bilateral financing operation at favorable cost conditions in coordination with bilateral credit agencies and other development banks. Negotiations with these agencies have already been underway throughout 2009. With this, I would like to close these opening remarks and open the floor to any questions that you have.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad now. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Eric Shapiro.
How are you, Alejandro? Two questions. One, maybe you could walk us through a little bit of the schedule as you see it going forward, you know, the mechanical steps now that you need to take to get this budget passed. And the second question, I suppose, is the obvious question. Does the PRI go along with this? Clearly, this does not include a VAT on food and medicine. Do you think that's enough to get the PRI to go along with this, which is obviously what you need to get this budget passed?
Yeah, in terms of the mechanical steps, I mean, first, we need the main economic commissions to be formed in the new lower house. Basically, we need the Hacienda and the Budget Commissions to be formed, given the new legislature that we have. That should happen during the second half of September. And then between this point and the 15th of October, the income law has to be approved in the lower house. Then it has to go to the Senate, and it has to be approved in the Senate by the end of October. After this approval, the lower house will have 15 days up to the 15th of November to approve the budget. In terms of the PRI, I mean, obviously, we have been in discussions, preliminary discussions for these last 2 weeks with the main political forces represented in Congress. I mean, we are expecting, obviously, an important discussion on all these topics. And And we think that after these discussions, a package that is fiscally responsible, that has a significant revenue increasing effect as the one that is being proposed by us, and that obviously suffers, I would say, some modifications, will be approved, given, I think, first, the responsibility that Congress has shown in terms of fiscal policy in the last 10 years. Secondly, I think the need for resources, not only for the Federation, but also for state governments and municipalities, that were obviously the representations of the different parties is widespread, and the PRI has a majority in terms of local governments. And thirdly, I think the main political forces also recognize the risks of not addressing our fiscal and structural problems in the current circumstances. So obviously it will be a volatile period in terms of the discussions we will have in Congress, but we think it's a proposal that has a strong fiscal responsibility element in it, but also has important elements of, that take into account the political restrictions that some of the main parties face. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Alejandro.
And at this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad now. Your next question comes from the line of Javier Mirico.
Hi, Alejandro. This is Javier Murcio. A couple of questions. Is there a calendar for presenting any other structural reforms that go beyond the budget? Could you tell us more or less what this would be and what the timing for that would be this year? And the second question is, what is the target for adjustments to energy prices, particularly gasoline and diesel, during the year? Thank you.
Hey, Javier. In terms of the calendar for structural reforms, I mean, there's no specific calendar, in the sense that, in some of the specific structural reforms, each of the responsible ministries is basically in an important dialogue with the main counterparts in each of these reforms. I am referring basically to labor reform and energy reform. I think that the president was very clear yesterday that he will be sending a public private partnership law that regulates many of these investment projects that are undertaken under these modalities and will give us a much more flexible framework within which to work these infrastructure projects that will be going to Congress relatively soon. I would say that some of the main financial sector reforms will also be going to Congress relatively soon. And I would say that with respect to labor and energy, or the second round of energy reforms, discussions are already underway, and they will depend, the timing on when we send this reform to Congress will depend a little bit on how these discussions progress in the next 3 or 4 weeks. With respect to public sector prices, basically, we will be lifting the freeze on prices that was put in place at the beginning of this year at the peak of the recessionary influences that the Mexican economy was receiving from the rest of the world. And we will be going back to a policy in which basically we gradually increase prices, taking into account the changes in international prices of energy, the local inflation, and the movements in the exchange rate. So those are the three main elements that will be entering the rule, and obviously this rule will give us a gradual convergence towards international prices in the medium term. I would like to take just the opportunity to mention two things that I forgot in my introductory remarks. With respect to fiscal discipline, we are introducing two articles in the income law by which if we have an income windfall throughout 2010, first we will be using this windfall to reduce the proposed 60 billion deficit that we are putting, so that we send a very clear signal that this is to accommodate the need to have a more counter-cyclical fiscal policy. However, if things turn out better than what we had anticipated at this stage, we will be using this windfall to reduce the deficit, not to increase expenditures. Secondly, we are removing also in the income law the limits in our oil stabilization funds, therefore to send a signal that if we have an important windfall, let's say associated to a significant and unexpected increase in oil prices, we won't be capping our oil stabilization funds during 2010. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Luis Arcentel.
Thank you for hosting this call, Alejandro. Quick question regarding on the issue you just addressed of fuel prices. The text mentioned that you were going to consider prices and costs and international and domestic references. Is the unfreezing of gasoline and diesel prices simply moving to the old deslice structure, or are you thinking of adding some extra flexibility on the pricing structure?
We are moving to the gradual, let's say, monthly increases that we had before. Obviously, we cannot include flexibility to the extent that the only distributor of gasoline in Mexico is Pemex, and therefore it's a predetermined price. We will be moving to a rule that will be reflecting these external influences. And as I said before, an element of convergence towards international prices in the medium term.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Gabriel Casillas.
Hi, Alejandro, Gerardo, and Miguel. Thank you very much for this effort. Just a quick question, very much similar to Luis Arcentales. When do you think the gasoline price hike is programmed to take place and other administrative prices? Could it be before the beginning of next year?
As I said before, we are making a description of the policy that will be in place in 2010. And the policy for 2010 will be one that is similar to the one we had coming into 2009, in which basically these monthly changes in the prices of gasoline were, these decisions were taken based on these three elements that I mentioned. So with respect to the economic package for next year, this will be the policy that will be put in place. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Pablo Goldberg.
Hi, Alejandro. How are you? From HSBC. Quick question. Can you give us a little bit of a breakdown of how much you expect each of the revenue enhancing measures to bring? When you gave us a total, but I just want to understand how much you're waiting on the 2% tax, how much is coming from the increasing corporate tax or other income taxes. Thank you.
Okay, I think Miguel can answer that.
For sure. In terms of, as Alejandro mentioned, overall we're expecting for the excise taxes to bring in close to 22 billion pesos, of which about half will be coming from the telecommunications, from the establishment of a tax on telecommunications, and the rest from the combination of excise tax increases on cigarettes, beer, games and lotteries, and alcoholic beverages. Also, as Alejandro mentioned, in terms of the income tax, the consolidation measures, the measures respecting deferred taxes for groups that consolidate fiscally would be bringing close to 30 billion pesos. The increase in tax rates would be bringing close to 45 billion pesos. The increase in the tax rate from the primary sector is basically marginal, of about 100 million pesos. And then the measures on the tax on cash deposits would bring close to an additional 3 billion pesos. And finally, we will also be limiting the possibility to apply the credit on the YETU associated with investment to income tax payments. That's also close to 3 billion pesos, for a total of measures associated with income taxes, YETU, and the tax on cash deposits of close to 73 billion pesos. Finally, we're expecting that the contribution to combat poverty will be bringing us close to 72 billion pesos in revenues. And then finally, there is the increase associated with the tax administration measures of close to 20 billion pesos.
Our next question comes from the line of Alfredo Thorn.
Alejandro, hello, Miguel. Two questions. One is, you mentioned that you will be probably long term, but if you can tell us, how are you planning to finance the 2.5% of the GDP of deficit that you will have in 2010? And the second question is, of all the taxes that you have proposed, where do you think you are more likely to be changed by the PRI party in the lower house? What are things that you think are more vulnerable?
Okay, with respect to the financing of the deficit, as I said, basically, we are proposing domestic issuance, net issuance ceiling of 340 billion pesos. As I said before, this is lower than the ceiling that we had for 2009. This, together with the limit of $8 billion for external indebtedness, will give us a strategy that, first of all, we are able to finance all of our financing needs domestically. However, to the extent that with the IFIs we can have, as we're having this year, an aggressive indebtedness strategy, therefore we will be generating more leeway and more space to be a little bit more aggressive in terms of lengthening the duration of our domestic debt issuance at a slightly faster pace than maybe what we anticipated. So, I mean, in summary, we expect to have a very similar issuance policy as the one we had in 2009. And the important point there is that our financing needs from the federal government perspective are lower than the ones we had in 2009. In terms of the political restrictions or the most politically sensitive issues on the agenda, I mean, sometimes it's hard to identify, but I think this time around it's easy to see that, first of all, some of the sectors that are being subject to the excise taxes will be lobbying in Congress for some changes in the proposed structure. And I think, obviously, there will be important discussion on the main two pillars of the income strategy, that is the income tax and the new contribution to alleviate poverty. And I think there we could be subject to some changes. It's important, as I said before, to notice that this fiscal shortfall that we're going through is even more pronounced at the state and municipalities level, and therefore in terms of generating an important consensus around different political constituencies to generate an increase in revenues, there's an important part of opposition parties representatives that are also biased towards a strategy that significantly increases revenue. So although on the specifics there might be changes, I think that overall we will end up with a income enhancing package that is similar to the one that we have described here. And I think maybe Gerardo can talk a little bit more about our issuance and debt management policies for 2010.
Yes, just a quick comment to complement Alejandro's remark. As you know, what we have done locally is to adjust the issuance pattern to accommodate better to the changes in relative appetite for long-duration instruments by just increasing the short-term treasury bill issuance. What we're expecting is that having a relatively moderate issuance needs for 2010, we'll be able to gradually undo some of the changes that we have implemented during 2009, so that by the end of 2010, we may be issuing a similar amount of debt in the long end of the curve as that that we were doing prior to the crisis. Of course, this has to be done only in the case in which market conditions allow us to move gradually to that issuance pattern. So in terms of the financing composition, having a relatively moderate financing needs, I guess the question here is only at the margin, what is it that we will need to do to accommodate the additional fiscal deficit for the public sector as a whole, that considering all financing sources for the public sector, we think this is going to be relatively easy to accommodate for the public sector as a whole. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Bruno Cotinho.
Good morning. I would like to ask you if the finance ministry has spoken to the central bank to touch bases on inflationary impact of the fiscal reforms and how that should affect the rest of the economy once we could see the central bank raising rates in the middle of a strong recession in Mexico.
Yeah, I think there's an important thing to say regarding this point. We would be expecting that to the extent that a reform along the lines that was just described is approved by Congress, the central bank should be comfortable on two dimensions. First of all, I mean, having a more solid fiscal position will help, I think, to bring down risk premium in domestic markets and affect the long end of the curve that has been subject to some uncertainties regarding fiscal sustainability in the medium run. This will also translate, I think, into a more stable foreign exchange market, and I think this will give the central bank a much better financial environment within which its monetary policy measures will have a stronger transmission mechanism, because the noise we will be having in our markets will be lower, and also the pressures on the exchange rate will be lower. Secondly, any effect coming on prices coming from these reforms should be transitory, should be a once-off effect on the price level, and I think the central bank should be able, through its important communication mechanisms, to signal this to the market, to signal which would be the main information or the main data that they will be monitoring to judge whether these changes are having second-round effects, and therefore if these second-round effects come into effect, take monetary policy measures. But ex-ante, think that to the extent that their policy is well understood, the market will recognize that this is a one-off effect in prices, and that with a medium-term perspective, the Mexican economy will be strengthened by this. And in addition to this, in a situation in which the output gap is negative, and negative and of a large magnitude, we expect that the possibility in many cases of transmitting this increase to the final consumer will be lower than in other conditions, and then the effect on prices will also be lower. So we will be obviously talking to the central bank for them to make their calculations, but I think these macroeconomic conditions are more important with respect to the design of the monetary policy than the one-off effects than any of these measures can have on the CPI. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Janina Zuniga.
Hi, thanks. Just a couple of clarification questions on the main numbers outlined at the beginning of the conference call. One question concerns the effort on the spending side. You mentioned cuts in spending of $75 billion in addition to $143 billion. What exactly of that is just a transfer of spending from one area to another, and what is the net cut? And then similarly, you mentioned that in order to compensate for the permanent loss in revenue, you are planning to raise $176 billion with new taxes, plus about 20 with tax administration measures. And then in addition to that, you've got spending containment, but that seems to cover more than 100% of the permanent revenue shortfall. So how do you budget that, if that's actually 100%, and if not more than 100%, where am I missing something? And then in terms of the financing needs, my second question is if you could just tell us the amount of amortizations due in 2010 that would complete the public sector borrowing requirements to get to the financing needs.
Okay. With respect to the first question, there's a total cut in total expenditures of $75 billion, and then there is a $140 billion of expenditure that is basically cut and reassigned to other expenditure pressures. So basically it's a reduction in total expenditures of $75 billion. With respect to the income effect of the tax measures, what I said is that we are expecting the proposed tax measures to give us 176 billion pesos in additional revenues. On top of this, we are expecting to have an additional 20 billion pesos coming from the public prices policies. And on top of this, we are expecting to have an expected 20 billion pesos coming from the efficiency-enhancing tax administration measures. And with respect to the amortizations and the total issuance program, I think Gerardo can give the numbers.
Yes, as you know, for market external debt, we've been operating over the last few years under the strategy of just to issue the amount of amortizations that we have coming due for that year. In that context, for 2009, we do have amortizations in the order of $3.2 billion. We've been in the market a couple of times in the past few months, and we will continue to see potential opportunities for the remainder of the year. Next year, we are planning to continue under the same strategy of only issuing in the international capital markets our amortizations coming due next year, which will be in the order of $2.4 billion. So also in terms of our needs, we're planning to have less, say, gross market external financing needs for 2010 as compared to those that we are having this year. Thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Jamie Valdiva.
Hola, Alejandro. ¿Cómo estás?
two questions. One is, what is the inflationary impact of this package for this year? I agree with you, it's a one-off, but still I'm sure you guys have made some even back-of-the-envelope calculations, independent of what Banxico is going to say or how they will regard this. I'm sure you guys have some numbers on those, and I'd love to get a handle on that. Second, one thing that struck my attention was the fact that you expect that growth will average 4.2% between 2011 and 2015. Given that this is a really large tax levy on the economy, what do you guys think is going to be the trigger for this somewhat high level of growth of 4.2% regarding, you know, considering that since 2003 there was only 1 year that you grew at 5%. So can you walk me through what you guys think the trigger for this growth is going to be? And lastly, do you guys think that this 2% VAT on everything is really going to pass and that the PRI will go back on its promise to not pass anything, any tax that affects medicines and foodstuffs? Thank you.
Hey, let me be quick. On growth, I think we think that the increase in the rate of growth is sustained, or this assumption is sustained on two things. First, an important structural reform agenda that has been put in place. I mean, we have advanced in the last 3 years in terms of pension reform, in terms of financial sector reform, and in terms of energy reform, but these efforts will be step up in the next 3 years. Secondly, I think with the efforts in the area of fiscal reform and additional structural reforms, the important recovery of the economy from the current slowdown will also allow the economy to grow at a faster rate, maybe than a potential for at least a couple, 3 or 4 years. I mean, we haven't had a fall in GDP of almost 7% in our history, and therefore a lot of the forces that drove this significant drop in GDP associated with a deep slowdown in the international economy, but also with the important financial dislocations that took place at the end of last year and the beginning of this year, are being removed, and therefore going back to potential will imply a growth rate of GDP that is higher than the potential rate of GDP growth. I mean, going to back to the potential level of GDP implies a higher rate of growth, and this will be sustained, or this path of growth will be sustained by the structural reform agenda. And I think by important domestic sources of growth, like the infrastructure agenda, that if you look at public sector investment and if you look at infrastructure investment in Mexico in the last 2 years, it has been at a level significantly above what we had in the previous 5 years. And the same holds true for the housing agenda. When I think another important element that has been limiting domestic demand throughout the last 18 months on top of the recession is basically the significant change in consumption credit granting policies of the banking system due to the significant increase in overdue loans associated with the strategy that was implemented in 2005 and 2006 that backfired. Banks have, first of all, reserved all these expected losses in the credit card portfolios, but more important than that, they have significantly upgraded their origination policies for consumption credit, and therefore we are expecting in 2010 that consumption credit will cease to drop. Today it's dropping at around 20% in real terms in the last numbers that we have for the month of July. We are expecting this negative growth rate to disappear, and we're expecting positive growth on this account. And the same holds true, for example, for the automobile sector that has suffered a significant and sharp drop. We are already seeing some recovery, and I think from a medium-term perspective, for the North American producers, it will make sense to shift within the smaller total production, a larger share of production towards Mexico, and this will imply higher levels of productions, significantly higher levels of productions than the ones we have observed throughout 2009. Going to the last question on whether we think the 2% tax will pass, I mean, we think it will pass. We think it has a chance of passing. We think that it's a very general base with a very low tax rate. We think also that ensuring that this tax will go to ensure the agenda on poverty alleviation, especially after the meager results that we had on this front associated with the food crisis of 2008, I think puts an important point on the table that we have seen similar discussions in other countries in which basically they have been able to increase other taxes basically to fund an important and ambitious social agenda. So we're putting this on the table. We think it's going to be an important and obviously a hard discussion, but I think it has an important chance of being passed. Maybe with respect to your inflation question, Miguel have some of these numbers.
Yes, so we've made some preliminary estimations of potential effects of the proposed package on inflation. And in general, obviously, it's a one-time effect. Under estimations are that the effect could be slightly above 1%. And this is basically due to two things. Obviously, there is a large part of goods in which, for example, regarding the excise taxes, where probably a lot of the transmission to prices will be moderate, given limited competition in some of these sectors. And then regarding some of the other effects that the increase in general taxes, more general taxes could have, obviously any type of effect would be limited in an important way. The pass-through from these measures would be limited in a very important way due to the weakness of the economy. So as I mentioned, we're estimating that the package as a whole would have an effect on inflation of slightly above 1%.
And can I just clarify that? Is it over 1 year, or is it over 3 months, or what period of time?
It's over 1 year.
Over 1 year. So you guys are assuming that some producers or whatever companies will not be able to pass on the increase in taxes, and they will absorb that themselves? Is that assumption underlying your estimation?
Yes, but in a relatively moderate way.
Right.
But clearly, some of these sectors are sectors where you have limited competition, and in addition, you have very weak domestic demand, which implies that the pass-through will be limited. And then finally, the reform agenda that complements the whole fiscal reform actually implies very important measures, and this is actually not fully taken into account in our estimations on potential effects of the tax measures. All of the reform agenda actually would imply important decreases in input costs. So obviously, to the extent that this agenda will be taking place and that this could be leading to important reductions in input costs, this could actually lead to an even lower effect.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Tom Smith.
Thanks. Hi, Alejandro. You mentioned that that any income windfall in 2009 will be used to decrease the deficit, the 60 billion peso deficit. I was just wondering how that would interact with the existing windfall structure where excesses, you know, over the oil price target are distributed to, you know, back to Pemex or state and local governments or saved, et cetera.
Yeah, basically the way it will interact, we are placing a new article on the income law that says that the first 60 billion pesos of excess total revenues that we have in 2010 will go to reduce the deficit, and after that, we will go back to the traditional rules with respect to the weights distributed, as you mentioned, to the oil stabilization fund, to the fund for Pemex. And what is important to say is that this rule will apply only to the windfall that corresponds to the federal government and to Pemex, and not to the windfall that will correspond to the state. So not to, if they want to save it, they should do it at the state level to have their own rules, and basically we are putting this rule in place for the federal government. And given that the income law is also a law that is approved by both chambers, and it takes place, the approval, after the fiscal responsibility law, and this, let's say, ruling will take place for only 1 year, from a legal perspective, this is perfectly fine. Thanks.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Martinez Patricia.
Hi, we have two questions. The first one is, are you looking forward to work in the future in a fiscal reform that address the complexity of the different rates and taxes? And this, well, as to make a more simple. And the second one, if this package should pass through the Congress as it is, stipulated, what do you think will be the reaction of the rating agencies?
I mean, obviously we will continue to work with Congress to improve our fiscal framework. We think that this proposal, taking into account, let's say, more than 1.5 percentage points in GDP, significantly strengthens our fiscal framework and reduces their dependency on oil revenues. But as you said, I mean, obviously there's significant space to continue improving with respect to moving to a more simple fiscal framework. I think some of that can be implemented through the use of technology, but obviously if we are able to move ahead in simplifying our tax framework through changes in our fiscal law, that will be very, very important as well, and we will continue to strive for that. I think that this new tax will be embedded in our tax structure in such a way that it will generate minimum or almost negligible increases in administrative costs, and therefore its effect on terms of tax administration and the cost of tax compliance should be zero or almost negligible. With respect to the rating agencies, I think it's our job to design our tax strategy. I think we have proposed a fiscal program that places at the center stage of our strategy for the second half of the administration a very clear signal of putting fiscal policy in a very clear solvent trajectory, especially in the face of the decline in oil revenues that we have seen in the last 4 years. I think we have been, and we will continue to be, in the second half of this administration extremely prudent with respect to the increases in debt to maintain a declining debt-to-GDP ratio after 2010 and an extremely slight increase in the debt-to-GDP. I would say that even our 3% GDP forecast for next year might end up looking slightly conservative when we move maybe a couple of months forward. Even now, there are many analysts who have forecasted GDP growth in the range between 3 and 4% for this year. And with these numbers, we might even see a decline in the debt to GDP numbers, even in 2010. I think with these numbers, we are proposing, I think, an important improvement on the structural and also on the macroeconomic aspects of our fiscal policy. And it will be up to the rating agencies to judge On this framework, we will be obviously discussing with them, but we are confident and we think that having a program that when you take into account its income generating measures and their expenditure reduction measures is higher than 2.5 percentage points of GDP, and that most of the effort is coming from income generating measures, and within this, most of it is coming through, let's say, the traditional sources of taxation, indirect taxation and income taxes, that would be the pillars of any sensible tax structure, we think it's an important program that it's, it will be a very important centerpiece of our discussions with the rating agencies. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Alexis Brock.
Hi, thank you very much. I have two quick questions. One is, I didn't see if you have an established or a peso forecast considered into your budget proposal. And I also read that your forecast for inflation is 3.3. Is this considering everything you've mentioned, including the 1% increase impact? Thank you.
Our peso forecast is 13.8. I think this comes from basically looking at a given point in the last 2 or 3 weeks when we were finalizing this program to the futures markets and to the surveys that you conduct, and therefore basically we try to be neutral with respect to forecasting financial variables. Secondly, the inflation forecast does not incorporate any inflationary effect that the passage of the reform might have. So you should add to this forecast whatever impact you will be estimating of the fiscal reform to estimate the expected inflation rate for next year. Thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of David Franco.
Thank you for the conference. You mentioned that this is a broad reform touching most of the taxes that Mexico has. I wonder if we focus on those aspects that are left behind at this time, which one of them are probably the most troubling in the sense of debt dynamics and fiscal stability, and if you plan to take some measures to strengthen the municipalities and also the states with probably a new transfer scenario from the federal government to the states. Thank you.
I think it's important to highlight two things. In terms of debt dynamics, as I said before, this program put us clearly, even under conservative assumptions with respect to growth in the next 2 years and with respect to the evolution of other financial variables, the price of oil, etc., under a very clear trajectory of a declining debt-to-GDP ratio. With respect to state governments and municipalities, I think it's important to highlight that, first of all, at this point in time, their debt is very small. Secondly, they have been able to access now financing from the financial system to cover their shortfall for 2009. And thirdly, if this package or a similar package is approved, their revenues will go back to the levels that were programmed for 2008, 2009. And therefore, with the package of the characteristics like the one we're discussing today, they should be in a position in which, together with obviously some expenditure adjustment, they're back to a fiscal situation that will eliminate any possibility of having, let's say, a fiscal crisis in a relatively small group of states or municipalities. I think this proposal, as I mentioned before, not only addresses the fiscal problems of the Federation, but also, and in a slightly better way, it addresses the fiscal problems of state and municipalities. Why do I say this? Because given that the composition of income is shifting from oil income towards non-oil sources of income, and the federal sharing revenues do not incorporate oil income at 100%. It incorporates oil income, I think, with a factor of 70%. Then any measure in which the composition of income, let's say maintaining income constant, but its composition shifts towards non-oil income, will benefit states and municipalities. So this is a proposal that is comprehensive in that respect, addressing the problems or the tax problems of the Federation, but also addressing in a significant way, given their dependency on federal transfers, the fiscal situation in state or municipalities. Obviously, with a medium-term perspective, the most important challenge that we have with respect to our fiscal federalism is increasing their local sources of income, especially the real estate tax and other sources of local taxes. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Adrian Devigny.
Thank you. With respect to the recently announced oil revenue loan, how will that affect, if at all, your plans regarding local revenue generation, and how will it affect your overall fiscal reform package?
No, I think it does not intersect at all with our fiscal reform package. This was basically a transaction undertaken by the states, through which basically they pledged their future oil windfalls that would be transferred for them to pay up for the loan that they are getting today. If this future oil windfall is not enough to cover the oil, they're pledging up to 4% of their federal transfers to cover for this loan. This has, I think, a horizon of 15 years. So it doesn't, as I said before, intersect at all with our proposal today. It's basically a financial transaction by which the states are smoothing their income. They're bringing forward some of their future income, especially with respect to oil windfall. And I think it was a smart transaction undertaken by the state, but in no way it has any implications for our package that I can think of right now. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Javier Murcia.
Yes, Alejandro, thank you again. Just to clarify, looking at all the structure of the reforms that you are proposing, there are a number of them that have a temporary nature expiring in the next 2 or 3 years. The tax devoted to poverty programs, that is a permanent tax, is that correct? And could you also tell us what percentage, more or less, of the overall package is going to disappear when these temporary taxes are disappeared? Thank you.
Yeah, you're right. The new contribution is a permanent. The new contribution is a permanent contribution. With respect to the other measures, basically, I would focus on the income tax. The income tax is a transitory measure that will go back to its original schedule, I think, starting in 2013. We think that to the extent that the economic recovery takes place, and that the potential rate of growth of the economy picks up to a range between, let's say, 3.5% and 4.5%, then the reduction in these rates, given the buoyancy of the income tax, will be enough to cover the reduction in its rate, as it happened in the last 6 years. If you remember, when the previous administration started, our personal income tax, highest tax rate was around 40%, and it came down all the way to 12 points towards 28%, without a very strong effect on total revenues. So to that extent, I think that if the growth of GDP, potential growth, goes back to a range, as I mentioned, between 3.5% and 4.5%, I think the effect of this higher growth rate on income tax revenues will be enough to allow the proposed reduction on the income tax rate to take into effect. The other transitory measures that are basically, I think, associated with the beer tax and other of the excises will have a much smaller effect on the total package, and I think we don't need to get into the details of those, but basically the main effects of this transitory nature of the proposal are associated with the income tax, and there I think the effects will be more than compensated with an increase in the potential rate of growth of GDP. Thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of Nader Nazmi.
Alejandro and Miguel, thank you very much for hosting this very informative session. My question is basically what Javier just asked regarding the temporary nature of some of the taxes that have been proposed, especially the income tax. Given that some concern was regarding the longer-term decline in oil revenue contribution to the budget, and given that by looking at your medium-term forecast, I see that you forecast contribution from oil revenue continuing to be close to 7% of GDP. How do you see this? Is the package addressing the decline in the oil revenue over the last several years, or does it have provisions to address the expected decline in oil revenue going forward?
We are expecting a further decline of 5% in oil production for next year. We think that this level of oil production could be sustained because Chicontepec, I mean, the assumption behind this this number is that in Cantarell we still have a further drop in production next year, an important drop that is compensated partially by the increase in production that we have seen in other fields such as Kumalopsap, and that this level will be sustained for the next 3 years. I think this is a relatively conservative assumption to the extent that Cantarell is approaching its, I mean, it has suffered a very significant reduction, and I think it's approaching what many of the geologists that we have consulted, it will be a stable level of production for many years into the future. I think also that in, let's say, in 3 years, the development of these fields such as Chicontepec and other fields that were, let's say, left behind many years ago, but now with new technologies can come back into production. I think with a horizon of three years, some of these fields could be producing a significantly larger amount of oil in the next 3 or 4 years, and therefore the 2.5 million barrels per day, in our opinion, it's a conservative assumption, to the extent that the new contracting schemes that Pemex has been allowed to due to the energy reform will come into effect in 2010. Also, Pemex could significantly increase its exploration activities and its development activities in deep and shallow waters. So, basically, we think we are having, let's say, a conservative assumption with respect to oil production. And as I said before, we think that to the extent that also our price assumption is relatively conservative, some of the surprises in quantities, could be compensated by a slightly larger price of oil. And therefore, under these assumptions, as I said before, with the increases in the potential rate of growth, then there might be space in the medium term to go back to an income tax rate of around 28%. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Daniel Volberg.
Hi, thanks for hosting the conference. I have a question on implementation. And supposing that the proposals pass Congress, what is the risk that implementation would be delayed in the courts, as has taken place, you know, in the previous cases, such as in the case of the IATU tax or the telecom tax?
Yeah, two things. First, the IATU tax was not delayed in the courts. I mean, the IATU tax was implemented as our law came into effect. It has been fought in court, and we have been winning many of these injunctions. I think this tax has a much lower probability of being fought by taxpayers. First of all, because I think its legal underpinnings are very hard to question. Secondly, from a cost-benefit analysis, if you are a very large Mexican company that will be significantly affected by the IATU, then the cost-benefit analysis of going into litigation makes sense. If you are a Mexican consumer that will be paying 2% tax on these things, I think it doesn't make a lot of sense to go into any type of litigation. And as I said before, also these tax has very solid legal underpinnings as well, so we don't see any type of litigation on that front. On some of the special taxes on the IEPS, there might be some litigation, but I don't think Hacienda has become much more cautious in the last 10 years on the rulings of the courts with respect to tax policy, and therefore the design of all these new taxes incorporate the historical rulings of many of similar decisions that the Supreme Court has undertaken in the last 10 years, and therefore our position to defend some of these taxes, the IEPS, if they would be subjected to any type of litigation, I think it's a much stronger one than the one we might have faced in the past, and all of them are relatively general in nature, and therefore, as I said before, from a legal standpoint, are much more solid than the one you were claiming. For example, back then, I think in 2002, there was a telecommunication tax that had many exemptions. So many firms actually won some of this litigation against Hacienda because they were claiming an unjust treatment by this tax, and this is not the case. This time around, it's a general tax on all the on the whole sector. Thanks.
And there are no further questions at this time.
Well, thank you very much. Thank everybody for joining into this conference call. And if you have any further doubts on the package, do not hesitate to contact us through our investor relations unit. Thank you.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.